Okay, today's daf is Gitin Pei Tet. We're going to start at the Gemara at Pei Chet Amud Bet. Today's Pei Tet. We're starting at Pei Chet. Oh no, my mistake. Okay, go back. Today is Pei Chet. We're starting at Pei Zayin Amud at the Gemara. It looked the same to me when I opened my Gemara. Okay, sorry for scaring everyone. Yes, okay. We're at Pei Zayin Amud at the bottom. Sometimes I get confused. Okay. So, okay, we read this Mishnah. We had all different options about the first case was Shir Miktsata Get Bekatvo Bedaf Hasheni. You remember he started writing the Get. Last time we saw two Gitim written next to each other. Now we have one Get. He starts writing and he continues on the next page and the Edim sign at the bottom. And we said that that's a good Get. So now the Gemara is going to question that assumption. The Lichush Dilma Hane Tre Gitehave. The Idrame Lezmana Dekama. The Edim Debatra. The Gazia Lezman Debatra. The Edim Dekama. Maybe there were really two Gitin originally, okay? And let's assume this one went longer on this side, and the left side was taller on the other side, and the parts he cut off had the date and all that information was missing. And on the first get, on the right side, he cut off the Adim signatures. And what we really have is a cut-off version of the original get, in which case we have the Adim at the bottom here, and that was really at the bottom on the left side of the left-hand get. And maybe there's an assumption that there were really two Gitin, and he cut off. Now, the first question is going to be, right, he maybe cut off right, the Zman of the Batra, the time on the second one, and the Edim at the bottom of the first one. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav, Kishayesh Rebach Milamata. It's a case where there was blank space at the bottom of this get, at the bottom. Okay? And if there's blank space, then you know that it didn't... wait a minute, it had blank space at the bottom... In which case, right, that space would have been filled with the signatures, right? So, in other words, you wouldn't have a get where it's a document. Remember, you have the lines. The Adim have to sign immediately under the last line. So if there's all sorts of blank spaces in between, then you know the Adim couldn't be signed at the bottom if this whole area is blank, okay? Because then the Adim aren't signed immediately under the get. So therefore, there's no concern if there's dead, white space, or in this case, it might not be white because it's parchment, but... off-white space at the bottom of the document, then you know that the Adim signature wasn't cut off. So then they say, well, that helps you with the right-hand get, but what about the left-hand get? The Dilma Zman Debatra Megas, maybe you cut off Megas Gazier, maybe you cut off the Zman at the top of the first one, just because the dead space at the bottom of the last one doesn't mean that you didn't cut something off on the top of the next one. So they say, no, the same thing. Kadama Rabbi Abba Amarav, Kishiyesh Rebach Milamata, just like we said there, if there's Rebach Milamata, Hachanami Kishiyesh Rebach Milamala. If there's lots of dead space at the top, and then the Adim signed, so it must be that there wasn't Zman at the top and then the get, because the get would have started immediately after the Zman. There's a little bit of a problem with this answer, because if the get is continuing from one page to the other, so why would there be this dead space at the bottom of the get or at the top of the get? It doesn't make so much sense, but...
Not like widows and orphans.
What?
Not like widows and orphans and writing, but they don't want one line of new paragraph starting at the bottom.
Right, a new paragraph. Yeah, right. Okay. Anyway, it's not a perfect answer. Vidilma, now they say, look, let's say he's writing the get, and then he continues on the next side. So now they're saying, Vidilma imluchi imluch, bekatav. One second. Vidilma imluchi imluch. In other words, maybe he changed his mind and decided, after he wrote the first side of the get, decided not to divorce her, and then he changes his mind again, and then he writes, he continues to write on the next page. Okay, just one second.
Michelle, I was just going to say that since it's a cloth and not a paper, maybe part of that spacing was there are imperfections in the cloth, and maybe they were concerned that the lettering wouldn't be so clear.
Maybe they didn't want to write on that part of the parchment. That's interesting, because there were imperfections. Right, so this assumes that that's not the issue.
Cut, right,
but
pieces?
But they could have cut and sewed pieces. I mean, that's why I think we're concerned about cutting, you know, because they were pieces. And on the other hand, you're going to see that Rav Ashi doesn't think that that's an issue at all. So he says, oh, obviously, if you're going to cut, you're going to be able to notice it was cut. But, right, it's, you know, again, it's hard to understand the reality. And interestingly enough, Rav Ashi has a whole different way of looking at it. And Rav Ashi, again, is the last Amora. So chronologically, he comes after this whole discussion many generations later. And it could be, again, the reality of how they wrote the parchment. You know, the cloth was different in his day than it was before. Tough to know. So anyway, maybe he changed his mind v'katav. Okay, so now they say no. Because here we can say, okay, again, each time they do it, they say, oh, well, must be a case where there's dead space, right? In other words, meaning if there's no dead space, then this wouldn't be true. Then you wouldn't be able to... You follow? Once we say it has to have dead space, then it means that if it doesn't have dead space, then you have to be worried that maybe they cut off and therefore you wouldn't accept this kind of a get that the Mishnah says is a good get. But this is what we call an ukimta, saying the case is only... this Mishnah is only in a particular case, in which case, in a general case, it wouldn't work. So now they're saying, oh, no. How can we be sure that he didn't change his mind, stop writing in the middle, and then restart and restart it on the next column? Right? Like sometimes you come back to something later, so you're going to start writing on the next column. So how do we know that that's not the case? So again, they're going to do an ukimta. They're going to say, "Dikatav hare at milamata umuteret milamala." Okay, this goes back to what Judy was saying about how you write. In other words, here it's when he started right at the bottom of the first one. It says hare at. And at the top of the next one, it says muteret. Okay, so basically, we know that he didn't change his mind mid-sentence and then decide, oh, now I'm going to write the second Torah later. Now, remember, what's the issue if he started writing the get earlier, changes his mind, and then rewrites the get later? Because this has a date on the get, right? Remember, the zman has to be the right zman. So if you change your mind, you have to rewrite a whole new get because the date doesn't no longer matches what he's up to. That's obviously assuming he's changing his mind a different day. Okay, so now... Vidilma itramele umutermilamala. So vidilma itramele kula vidilma itramele. Really, maybe he could have changed his mind in mid-sentence. It could happen. Hareyad, maybe as he's writing it, he starts to have right, ever, and if you buy a house, you ever sit there to sign the contract, and the person, this happened with me when we were buying our house, the person selling the house didn't want to sell it. It was actually very timely. It was Ta'anit Esther, and it was getting late. And the only time we could do it was late in the afternoon, and we had to get to shul, and she was just taking her time. She couldn't sign. You know, it's like, as you're right there, you could see they're having pangs. So they're writing the words, Hare Ad, and all of a sudden he starts thinking, maybe not. So it could be mid-sentence he could change his mind. But the Gemara doesn't really think about that that's really a chashash. They say, Kule hai lo chayshinan. It's not so common that that's going to happen, which is interesting because I would have thought maybe that would be. But anyway, they say that's not a chashash, and therefore we don't have to worry about that. Rav Ashi now takes, so according to this mahalach, we've now said that we're talking about that there's dead space, right? Or that it's mid-sentence, right? And then you don't have to worry mid-sentence. So now they say, Rav Ashi amar, he has a whole different interpretation. Diyadia ben mitachta de megilta. Everybody knows the way the parchment works and the folds and the they're going to notice if you cut it. Okay, like we all know, right? When you have a piece of paper and it's cut, you can see it's cut rather than it was a whole piece of paper to begin with because we don't cut as well as right. You can tell. So therefore, they're not worried that anything got cut off. Okay. That's the second interpretation, in which case there's no ukimta to the Mishnah, in which case the Mishnah applies in any case where you would have a get like this. Whereas according to the first, it's going to depend on how it looks. Chatmu edim b'rosh hadaf. Now, if you recall, we had all these signatures in strange places, right? We had, if they sign at the top, it's not good. If they sign, right, if there's one going one way and one going the other way, right, and there's signatures in the middle, okay? So the way we understood all those cases, I'm just going to remind you, in case you don't remember from yesterday, we have a piece of parchment. Okay, I'm putting an imaginary line in the middle. Okay, one get, let's say, goes this way, and the other, right, going from the middle, right, let's say you fold the page in half, and then you would have each one coming out. That's like we're Rosh Hashanah, so Rosh Hashanah. And then this one would be, you know, upside down going that way. Okay, so you would have each one going in each direction, and then you have Adim signed in the middle. Okay, the Adim sign across that imaginary line. If you folded the paper in half, there would be an imaginary line, Adim sign. Now, based on the Gemara, etc., we're going to get into maybe that's not exactly how it looked. Okay? That's why I want to show you how it looked and then say that maybe that's not really. Okay. Chatmu Eidim B'Rosh Hadas. So now we have a case. Forget about the Rosh Hoshozeh, Rosh Hoshozeh. We just have a regular get. The get is written and the Eidim sign at the top. Okay? Or Batsad. You remember they signed on the side of the page. That's also a problem. So, Imi, is that really true? V'ha Rav Chatim Minatsad. We know about Rav that he would sign documents on the side. So how could it be that we say it's no good? Hatam B'Shegago Klapei Haktav. So I'm just kind of directing you where we're going to go with this so you follow the flow. They're going to try to figure out how it is that Rav signed from the Tzad and it was good. They're going to raise a suggestion. They're going to play out that suggestion through the rest of this Mishnah and show that it doesn't make sense to say that that's the case. In which case, they're going to reject it. And in the end, they're going to say that when Rav signed, we weren't talking about get, we weren't talking about regular shtero, we were talking about some insignificant something, which we'll see when we get there. Okay, but first assumption is we know that Rav signed from the side, so we think this is on regular documents, Kitin included, and other shtero. So what do they say? Hatam b'shegago klapei haktav. Okay, what does that mean, gago klapei haktav? Gago is the top of his letters. If you sign the document on the side, like I did here, you write Eidim on the, you know, the sign, the guy says the aid, okay? Now, the top of these letters is right next to the text of the document. So the Gemara assumes right now that that would be okay. If the top of the letters touches or, you know, faces, the top of the letters faces the words of the document, even if it's perpendicular, it's not, right, it's not the same direction, that would be okay. So you could sign on the side of the document, and as long as the top of your letters are facing the words, the body of the text, that's fine. So that's what the Gemara thinks right now, and that's how Rav signed Minatzad. So now they say, wait, that's not going to work with Elahata Katane, he keep Rosho Shalzeh, Betzav Rosho Shalzeh, V'ha'edim Ba'emsa, Shneim Psulim. What did we say? If these two Eidim, right, these two Gitim, one is the Rosh of this, is the Rosh of that, and the Eidim sign in the middle, we said it's no good because why? We said the Eidim have to sign at the bottom. But if you say that the top of the letters have to face the body of the text, then one of these Gitim will be, right, the one on the top, the Eidim's, the Gog of their letters, is facing the text on the top. So the text on the top half should be okay because you have Gago Klapei V'Ktav. Okay, so now what do they say? It must be, so why doesn't it work? The lech say, hey, minay klapei ktav, right? That's the suggestion. We should see which one is facing the ktav. The lit kasher, and it should be okay. So now they say, no, hatam, you misunderstood the case in the Mishnah. How are the edim signed here? Dirame le ki ivra. Okay, now I have to make a whole new picture because I don't have space for what we're going to say now. What we have was the get at the bottom, okay, and the get at the top, but now instead of it starting, we're going to have the Eidim signing perpendicular to the Chtav, okay? So the writing is going, if you, let's say you fold the paper in half, the writing is going bottom up and bottom right from the fold going out, but the Eidim are signed the other direction. Instead of being on the fold that we talked about before, they're now signed in the direction, basically, the top of their, right, the first letter is going to be closer to one get, and the last letter is going to be closer to another get. It's going to look like this, okay? They're, I don't have enough space the way I drew it, but basically they're writing from, it's almost like they draw a line from one to the other. Now, if you do this, what happens? The top of their letters is facing the side of the document, which there's nothing written on. So that's how this doesn't work, because you have to come up with a case where the gog of their letters, the roof of top of their letters, isn't facing any text. And that must be what the case is. Okay, that all works fine for this case, but it's not going to work fine for the next case in the Mishnah, because if you recall, there were cases where it would work. And what did we say? So, Ivra, by the way, what's Ivra? Ivra is a door bolt. How does a door bolt go? It goes perpendicular into the door. So that's what they mean. That's a way of saying perpendicular. Okay, they obviously didn't have a word for perpendicular, so that's what they used. Or maybe they did, and just people weren't as familiar with it as they were with door bolts, so they gave an example of a door bolt. So, ihachi, if you're going to say that, seifa, what about the last part of the Mishnah, dekatane, or the later part? Rosho shalzeh bitzad sofo shalzeh. Let's say you have let's say, this would be a case where you started, you get at the top, right? You went halfway, you stopped, it was over. Then your next get started from the middle and went all the way down, right? It was like one page, basically, get on the top, get on the bottom. Rosho shalzeh is like the sofo of that, right? The rosho of the middle one is klapei, the sofo of the get at the top. And then, what did we say? If you remember, what did we say? If you sign it, the Yaakov ben so-and-so, right? What's that going to be? The top get is going to be okay because you signed in the middle on that line. So that's facing the top of the top get. But if you say that the signatures are perpendicular, then it should be exactly the same as the last case. That it doesn't work for anything because the signatures don't match any, don't correspond to any of the gittin. So therefore they say it doesn't make sense to say that that's the Mishnah is talking about. So what do we say there? Rosh Hashanah b'satzafot shazeh v'edim ba'emtza. So et shahedim nikra'im imo b'satzafot kashir, right? The where the edim appear right at the end would be good. V'i derame ki'ivra, and if it's perpendicular, la b'hade ha'mikre, v'la b'hade ha'mikre. It's not read right to the first one. It's not read with the second one. So it shouldn't work at all. So therefore, they say, Ela Rav, it can't possibly be that Rav signed these shtarot min atzad. What was he signing? Bidiski havachatim. He was signing other sorts of documents. Now, what did the Mefreshim explain that what's diski? It was, he would order people to the court, like a subpoena. And that he would sign min atzad, because that didn't matter. That didn't need a formal signature. Now, of course, what do you learn from this? That you have to be careful, even in documents that aren't important, how you sign them. People remember that. First of all, if you think about it, people got subpoenaed to the court probably more than they actually saw documents in the court, or possibly. So those are the things people saw. They obviously then told about it and caused some confusion about it. So
you have to be careful if you were robbed.
Yeah,
if you're the person, you probably don't have to.
Well, first of all, right. What I mean here, exactly. So first of all, if you're a rav, you have to be more careful about what you do, because people are going to learn from you. Right, and particularly if you're like rav, who is a very big rav, you have to really watch your steps. Now again, that's all assuming that the way the Gemara understands Rav is really the reality of what Rav was doing, right? We don't know the reality anymore. This is something that got passed down and nobody really knows what happened, what Rav was really doing when he signed. And maybe he had a different approach. Right? This is all trying to match it with what we know and what we think. And, you know, as usual, the Gemara is struggling to understand something and they're giving an answer. Whether that's actually what happened, we don't really know. Yeah.
Is this a problem only when there's two gittin together and the page is folded? If a get is by itself...
If a get is by itself and you sign on the side, it's a problem.
It's still a problem.
And the reason they brought these other cases was to say, if you thought it was okay because the roof of the letters is facing the text, it's not, because these cases wouldn't work. You know, the whole flow of the Mishnah doesn't make any sense according to them. Okay?
Did you see them rub a sign with a fish?
Ah, so right. We also saw the rough sign with the fish. Exactly. So, right. They were all, but still, you would have to say the top of the fish, although fish maybe could be upside down. I don't know. Good question. Anyway, I don't know if he always signed with the fish also. It could be just sometimes. Okay. Get Shekhatu, you can see how many lessons they learned from Rav, you know, all sorts of halachas they tried to learn from Rav based on his signatures. So, you know, thus strengthening the point we made before. Get shekatvu ivrit, ketav sofer ve'eg kasher. Okay, now we're getting back to this ketav sofer ve'eg kasher, which each time we learned, we found somewhat confusing. I actually found a new perush today, which to me makes a little more sense. I'm actually going to learn the sugya a little bit differently than I learned it last time, using a different parshan. Okay, it's the Maharit, and he has a different approach to what this whole thing of Rabbi Yossi is mili lo mimsir and l'shaliach. Okay, until now, when we learn, I'm just going to give some background. Rabbi Yossi holds that mili lo mimsir and l'shaliach, which we learn to mean, okay, based on Rashi and most of the Mefarshim, that it means that you can't, if you tell Adim to do something, to something that's not, you don't pass them an item, you just give them instructions, verbal instructions, they can't pass on those verbal instructions, like for example, kitvu get utnu lishti, they can't pass them on to somebody else. That's mili lo mimsir and l'shaliach. But if you look at the pshat of the words, the Maharit has a little bit of a better interpretation, which I like it better because it works a little better with this case. Then he says, mili lo mimsir and l'shaliach means when you give words, it doesn't relate to the second shaliach, that the first shaliach can't make a second shaliach. What it means is you're not really making him a formal shaliach. You can't actually pass on instructions and affect shlichut. It's not really shlichut. Okay, so when you pass on something, it doesn't really count as shlichut. So therefore, how does this work here? So now we have, and then obviously, if you can't pass it on as shlichut, then he can't pass it on to someone else. And that would be, see, we come to the same conclusion according to this reading. But let's read it now according to this interpretation. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Hatam, so remember, if Ktav Sofer Ve'ed is Kashir, right? So that means, according to the Pshat, which we're going to say can't possibly be, but if the Ktav Yad is the Sofer's Ktav Yad, and there's Eid Echad Khatum, right? Then that's a good get. That's Kashir. So obviously, how could that be Kashir? It only has one signature. So now we're going to say, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Chatam Sofer Shaninu. We mean that it had Eid Echad Khatum and the Sofer Khatum. Okay, but it does have two signatures. And then they say, Amar Chista Hamane, Rabbi Yosihi. This all fits in with Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because if Rabbi Yossi says that you can't tell a shaliach to affect a get, right, to write and sign the get, then there's no concern that someone else signed instead of who you wanted to sign. Because if you specifically wanted someone to sign, you said to the aide, make sure so-and-so and so-and-so signs. So that's not a relevant, according to this interpretation, that wouldn't even be effective at all. So therefore, if someone else signs, it wouldn't happen ever that someone else signed, because that's not an effective shlichut. So therefore, if you have the Eid Echad and the Sofer, you don't have to worry that maybe he told someone to find so-and-so and so-and-so, and in the end, the Sofer signed, because the only way the Sofer could sign is if he designated him to sign. In other words, he says, sign the get. Okay? And therefore, you're not worried that if he passed on, we're not worried that if he passes on this message to a shaliach, go take care of, you know, getting these witnesses to sign again. What's the whole concern? The whole concern is that he wanted specifically Plony and Plony. And then what happened? You know, they were, Plony and Plony came to sign. You know, the shaliach he designated went to find Plony and Plony. They came to sign, and then what happened? When they were there, they realized it's a big embarrassment to the Sofer. This Plony will just disappear, he'll move out of the scene. We'll let the Sofer sign in place of him, and then it won't be like the husband wanted, and the get won't be a good get. So now, according to the Maharit's interpretation, it works a little bit better, because if we say it's Rabbi Yossi, then we say that the only way the Sofer could be signing is if the husband himself said, go sign the get. Okay? And then he actually did it for him. Obviously, the problem with this is, what do you mean? You can never tell a shaliach to do something without handing him something? Is that really true? It's a little tricky, but it definitely makes a little more sense in the sugya here. So, Amar Rav Chista Hamani Rabbi Yossi. Okay, that's the end. Here, in fact, after they've discussed the sugya already twice, they don't get into all the details of what the concern is. They figure you know already by now. Hahik tshuva, which works well if you're doing the Daf Yomi. If you were just learning this parak, it wouldn't really help you very much. You'd have to go back there and read it there to understand. Hahik tshuvat chatanim, da'ate lekameh de Rabbi Avahu, da'hava yadale letofsu lechatimat yada, da'chad sa'ada, savra lach shure. So now this tshuva came, and it came before Rabbi Avahu. They knew the tofes, meaning they knew who wrote it. They knew the sofer, so they had the ktav yad of the sofer. And they knew that the chatimat yad was the eid echad. And what did they say? Oh, let's machshir this based on the pshat of the Mishnah. Because the pshat of the Mishnah says, if you know it's the ktav yad of the sofer, and the eid echad chatum, it's okay. Amar le Rabbi Yirmiya, chatam sofer shaninu. Rabbi Yirmiya said, no. It means that the sofer had to sign, and this get is not signed by the sofer, and therefore it's no good. Okay, moving on. Katav chani chatov chani chata kasher, right? This was either he writes a nickname instead of his real name, or he writes the father's name, right? Or he writes the family name or something like that. We weren't sure exactly how to translate it. Now we're going to see another brayta that relates. This could kind of go with any interpretation, because this could either mean that this is that exact interpretation, or maybe it's just giving other examples of nicknames and such, and therefore it doesn't necessarily indicate what our mission is talking about, but it's something similar. Tana Rabbanan, we have a brayta that says, Chanichat avot begitin ad yudorot. Let's say you have a name, like let's say 10 generations ago there was a guy, Avraham, and everyone from that family is now nicknamed Avraham, you know, or their last name, so to speak. Remember, they didn't really have last names. But people called them Avraham, right, because they were from Avraham. So if that's the case, but let's say people haven't called him Avraham, that family Avraham, for 10 generations now. So, if it's already been 10 generations, and that's exactly what they wrote on the get, then it doesn't count. But if they've been calling them Avraham within the last 10 generations, then that would work. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer shlosha dorot kasher, mikam ve'elach pasul. He says you can only go back 3 generations, which is interesting, because that would be basically your lifetime, right? 3 generations is about a lifetime. 3 generations of people live. So he's saying you can go back to within your lifetime, but if it's before your lifetime, then we're not going to really count it. Keman Azla Hadam Rabbi Chanina. This is a strange line. They're just saying, I mean, I think it's a little strange why they're bringing this, because it's kind of obvious, but they're saying, maybe they're just trying to tell us that this was a machloket Tanaim, and now we have an Amora. So according to his opinion, does this Amora go? The Amar Rabbi Chanina, he's an Amora. Katav Chanichat Avi Begitin Al Gimel Dorot. So according to who is this? Keman? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now it's basically stating the obvious, but maybe they're just trying to say that, look, here's an Amora who went in the path of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. They're doing it in a question-answer format, but that's how they say it. Amar Rav Huna, my Kra'ah, where do we learn this from a Pasuk? Ki toli banim uvene banim v'noshantem. Okay, what does that mean? Ki toli banim uvene banim, right? This is in the Tochacha and Dvarim. When you have sons and grandsons, so that's three generations. Banim, and then bene, and then banim. It's really two generations, but it sounds like three, because banim is mentioned three times. V'noshantem means and you get old. So when do you get old, right? That's three generations. And that's going to mean that the name is already old. If it's before the three generations, it's going to be too old. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Now that we quoted this pasuk, we're going to have a digression about this pasuk. Lo charva. Now, what does this pasuk say? Okay, let's read the whole pasuk. If you have it in the Torah, or you can look. It's very Perek Daled, pasuk kafhei. Ki toli banim uvenei banim v'noshantem ba'aretz, and you'll be old in the land. Behishchatem v'asitem pesel tmunat kol, and you start to make avodah zarah. V'asitem hara b'enei Hashem Elokecha l'hachiso. Okay, I don't have it here, but the next pasuk is, right, you're going to be destroyed. And that's aved tove dun. Okay, you will be destroyed from the land, kicked out, etc. So now they're going to say, Amar Bishua ben Levi, lo charva eretz Yisrael ad she'avruba zayim batei dinim avodah zarah. Okay, until there were seven courts of avodah zarah, basically. Until there were seven, we're going to see seven kings who worshipped avodah zarah, bad kings. And that's when the Churban happened, after these seven. Ve'eluhen, Yeravam ben Nevat, Basha ben Achia, Va'acha ben Omri, Ve'yehu ben Nimshi, Pekach ben Remaliah, Menachem ben Gadi, Va'oshea ben Elah. Shene'amar, how do we know you need Shiva? Umlala yoledet ha-Shiva. Okay, this is a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Nafcha nafsha, okay, in other words, umlala, Nebuch is this, yoledet shiva, the one who bore seven. Nafcha nafsha, she's having trouble breathing. Ba shimsha, the sun went down, be'od yomam, when it was still daytime. Okay, you can see the imagery. Busha v'chapera, right? It's a busha v'chapera. It sounds like cherpa, but it's not. It's, I forget how they translate it. What do they say in the English? Chafera?
Ashamed.
Ashamed. Okay, well, that's busha, right? It's a synonym for ashamed. So there's seven here, right? She has seven sons. That's the seven bad kings. Amar of Ami, my Kra'ah, he says, no, I have a different pasuk. And that's how we get to our pasuk. Ki toli banim uvene banim. So how did they get to seven? So what do they say? Banim, bine, and banim are all plural. So that's six. And tolid is another one. So that gets to seven. And that's Obey Tovidun, right? In other words, it connects exactly to the Churban. Amar Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi l'Rav. K'tiv be b'Hoshea ben Elah v'yaz hara ben Hashem. Rak lo kemachay Yisrael. What did it say about him? He was bad, but just not as bad as the kings of Israel. U'ch'tiv alav ala Shalman Eser. But in his day, Shalman Eser came and brought about the Galut. So now what do they say? Amar lehu otam. So what? How could it be if he wasn't as bad as some of the others? Why did the destruction happen in his time? So what do they answer? Amar lehu otam perdisaot shehoshiv yirabam al adrachim kedei shelo yalu Yisrael laregel. Remember Yeravam, when he made his whole new mikdash and he wanted people to go there and not to the other one, he put up shomrim to make sure people didn't go on the aliyah laregel. So what did Hoshea do? Ba Hoshea ubitlan. He took them off. Oh wow, that sounds like a good thing, right? He got rid of those shomrim to allow people to go on aliyah larega. But what was the issue? This is fascinating. If you talk about leadership, right? In the beginning of the daf, we had a little bit about leadership and Rav and being careful what you do. So now, here's another problem with the leader. Ba'af al pichen lo alu Yisrael larega. Okay? So they didn't, even though he took them down, they didn't go on aliyah larega. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Otam Shanim Shelo Alu Yisrael LaRegel, Yalchu Bashevi. All those years that they didn't go on Aliyah LaRegel, they'll go now Bashevi. So what's the issue here? The issue is, the way I see it, is that the leader is only so good as much as he can affect change by taking off the barrier that didn't get the people to go. So if he can't move the people, then he's not really a leader. So while, yes, it was nice that he took off these barriers, but it didn't lead to anything. So you can try as much as you want to be a leader, but if you can't actually change anything, then your leadership isn't effective. So that's why they get taken Bashevi in his time. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, Amar La Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Okay, either said in the name of Rav Ukva or Rabbi Yirmiyah. Darash Mememar, my dichtiv, Vayishkor Hashem ala ra'av yivieha aleinu. Hashem, I forget exactly how he translates Vayishkor, he saw the bad, it's a stronger word. What?
He hastened
the bad to come, and he brought it upon them. Ki tzadik Hashem Elokeinu, because he's righteous. So now the Gemara is going to say, what's the connection of those two parts of the pasuk? Okay, this pasuk from Daniel. Mishum di tzadik Hashem Elokeinu, Vayishkor Hashem ala ra'av yivieha aleinu. So what does it mean? Elatz taka asakadosh baruch hu Yisrael shigla galut zikiyahu v'adayin galut yechonya kayemet. Tichtive begalut yechonya hacharesh v'hamazger elef. Okay, we'll stop for a minute. What happened? He hastened it to come. Okay, we're going to see the numbers in a minute. It was supposed to be 852 years after the, they got out of Mitzrayim. Maybe it's counted from... I think the 850 is counted from way back, like in Brit Ben Abtarim, maybe. Forget it. It was going to be 852 years, and he made it happen in 850 years. And what was the issue? So the Tzidkiyahu would go to Galut, right? He was the king at the time. So that he would go to Galut when the Galut of Yehoyachim, what happened, okay, historically? First... Okay, the Galut of Shalmaneser that we talked about in the time of Hoshea ben Elah was Yisrael, the kingdom of Israel. Now we're talking about the kingdom of Yehuda, which was later. And first, Yehoyachim, a bunch of the people went into Galut, which we're going to see now, the Charesh and the Mazger. What's the Charesh and the Mazger? We're going to see in a minute, are the Talmidei Chachamim. So first the Talmidei Chachamim went. Now what was the issue? So this was all, by the way, to show that the Bavel Talmidei Chachamim were deep-rooted, that they came from, you know, way back when. It was part of that struggle between trying to show that Bavel was stronger than Eretz Yisrael in the time of the Gemara. So now, what happened? The assumption is they were Talmidei Chachamim, so the whole idea was that when Tzidkiyahu went into Galut, there was still, this actually goes back to the whole thing about how many generations were living at a time, that there were still, the Talmidei Chachamim were still there. If they waited another 2 years, they'd have all died out, and when they got to Bavel, there would be no more Talmidei Chachamim there. So therefore, they wanted them to go to Galut when there were still Talmidei Chachamim. So now how do you get Charesh and Mazger are the Talmidei Chachamim? Charesh, it's really not Charesh, like death, but they're going to darshan that. Shebesha'a shepotchin, when they start speaking, nasu akol kecherchin. Everybody quiets down because they have nothing to say because they're so smart, the people talking. Mazger, kevan shesugrim shuv ein potchin. This is an interesting one. If the Talmidei Chachamim can't figure out a sugya and they close it, they say, okay, we can't understand this. Nobody else opens it up again because if they can't understand it, no one else is going to understand it. The Kama Elef. Ula Amar Shekdim Shte Shanim Levino Shantem. Okay, first of all, where do we get this 852 years? It's the Gematria of Vino Shantem. Okay, so now they say, and if you do the count, it comes out to 850 and not 852. Okay, it's counted from when the Pasuk was said or something. I can't remember. Where does it count from? Do you see? Right. It's from when they got to Israel. Thank you. Okay, that was it. It's when they got to the land of Israel, right in Yoshua. So it was supposed to be 852 years, and it ended up 850. Okay, and the 852 comes from the Gematria of Vino Shantem. Amrav Acha Bar Yaakov Shma Mina Mehera Demare Alma Timne Mea V'Chamshin V'Tar Tehu. Okay, what's this Mehera? Because it says Ki Oved Tovedu Maher. So now you learn that the sun is going to come quick. It's going to be 852 years. What to do with that line, I don't really know. But anyway, food for thought. Okay, maybe it's in terms of always trying to rush through things. Okay, now we get, again, at the end of the Masechet, it's very interesting. We're getting to all sorts of basic stuff about Gittin that you would have thought they would have talked about earlier, but in the end, they really talk about them here. Okay, and you can particularly, we're going to see at the very, very end, on the last stop, about on what basis can you divorce a woman? Can you divorce her for any reason, or do you need a very legitimate reason, which we'll see what that might be. Okay, so that also you would think would come at the beginning, right? If we're talking about divorce, so in what cases can you get divorced?
Maybe they didn't want to make it so easy.
They didn't want to make it easy, so what? So they put it at the very end so that you only figure it out later, maybe. Right? Maybe they didn't really want to talk about it, but in Kfar you're going to force them to, so. Although there's lots of things they discuss in the Masechta that you could say the same thing about. Anyway, get mu'useh b'Yisrael kasher. Okay, get mu'useh is a forced get. Okay, now you see it's kasher. What does it mean to get mu'useh is kasher? This doesn't mean you can force a guy to give a get, but what does it mean? It means you can force him ad sheyomar rotzani, till he really wants to do it. Now, why does this work? If you're really forcing him, right? This is why people beat people up and they put him in jail and they take away their driver's license and they do all sorts of things to get them to say, okay, fine, I want to give the get. That's called a get mu'useh. Okay, he's allowed to give this if it was done in a, if the Jews forced him to give the get. Okay, we're going to see in a second, ubovdei kochavim pasul. Okay, but if an ovei kochavim does it, if they force the guy to give a get, like a non-Jewish court, then it's not allowed. Okay, we're going to talk about this in a minute. Okay, ubovdei kochavim chovtino tova omrim lo, asema shisrael omrim lecha, and then it'll be good. Okay, in other words, let's say, there's no Jewish court that can do it, so you have a non-Jewish court do it, but they say, do what the Jews want. In other words, if they do it with the jurisdiction of the Jews, where, you know, they use the words of the Jews, to, not maybe jurisdiction, but saying, we want you to do this because this is what the Jews want, then it's okay, but not if there's no Jewish connection there. Okay, why is this okay, and why is it not okay if non-Jews do it? So we're going to see in a minute why it's not okay if non-Jews do it. But the assumption is that Ad Shiomar Rotzani, the Rambam says this, that everyone inherently, right, this all goes to philosophy, is man inherently good or is he inherently bad? And okay, but man inherently wants to do mitzvot. So since it's a mitzvah at this point to give the get to your wife, then there's no mitzvah to give a get to your wife, but in a certain situation where the courts are telling you to do this, ultimately he wants to do the right thing, okay, even though it doesn't appear that way, right? Especially these people who are, you know, doing this kind of stuff. They definitely don't appear like they want to do the right thing, but they're saying deep down they really do want to do the right thing. So therefore, when he says Rotzani, he really does want to do it. There's something deep down that wants to do. Am Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Get ha-me'useh b'Yisrael kedin kasher, shelo kedin pasul. Okay, so now they start distinguishing. It's not any forced get. If it's forced kedin, okay? If it's forced in the proper way, meaning that the guy eventually says, I want to do it, right? Okay? Now, there's ways that get me'useh can be done, and there's ways it can't be done, and that's what causes all sorts of complications nowadays about trying to force people to give gets. It's not so clear-cut. So it's not so simple. So there's ways it can be done, there's ways it can't be done. So if it's done, b'Yisrael kedin, it's a good get. Shelo kedin, it's pasul, but it's also uposel. It's not a good get. However, if she received a get in this way, which doesn't count as a good get, but let's say he dies, she can't marry a Kohen because she's pasul, okay? It's posel ota from marrying a Kohen. Ubovdei kochavim, now we're going to drop one notch, okay? If they do it kedin, okay, if they force him ad shema rotzani, then it's pasul uposel. Then it's no good, but it does pasul her for kahuna. Shelo kedin, but if they do it shelo kedin, then afilu re'acha get embo, which we already know means that she can marry a Kohen if they do it shelo kedin. So now the Gemara is going to say, I don't understand. Manafshach. Iyavdei kochavim b'nei asuyenin hu, it kashur enami litkasher. Ilav b'nei asuyenin hu, mifsal lo lipsal. In other words, either it works or it doesn't work according to the non-Jews. If it works, then it should be a good get. If it doesn't work, then it shouldn't be a get at all. So why would apostle her the kahuna? So Amar Rav Masharshia, so now we're going to have Rav Masharshia's approach, which someone later is going to reject. But Rav Masharshia answers this question. It says, Dvar Torah get me'useh b'ovdei kochavim kasher. Really, a get me'useh mida oraita is a good get, and that's why apostles are the kahuna. But mida rabbanan, they said it's not a good get, and that's why she's still going to be considered married. Uma tam amru pasul. This is a strange line. I don't 100% understand. Shelo tehei kol achat v'achat holechet v'tola atzma b'ovdei kochavim u'mavkat atzma miyabala. I mean, I think I understand it, but what's going on here is they're concerned that a woman realizes she has no way, she wants to get out of a marriage, which obviously she can't halachically because she needs the husband to give a get. So the assumption is if she can't get anywhere in the Jewish courts, so she'll go to a non-Jewish court, she'll find some non-Jewish thugs that'll go and beat up her husband, force a get out of him, and then she'll get out of the marriage. Okay, why they're so concerned about this is, I guess, what's troubling. You know, if the woman wants so much to get out of the marriage that she's going to hire non-Jewish thugs to get her husband to give her a get, So it sounds to me like she shouldn't really be married anyway. But their concern is that women will use this as a tool to kind of, you know, get around the halacha. And they're concerned with that. And therefore, they figure this is all about, this is sort of like we said about Bavel trying to gain their authority. It's sort of, if we do it ourselves, we trust our intuition. We have a good intuition to know when we can force a get and when we can't. And non-Jews don't have that same intuition that we have. And therefore, they were concerned that if we allow it in a non-Jewish court, maybe they won't know when the wife is kind of abusing the halacha and when she's using the halacha to her advantage. And therefore, they don't allow it. So that's Rav Sharsha's approach, that it's only midrabbanan, that the rabbis are concerned with the woman, you know, kind of taking the law into her own hands. So then they say, but wait, there's a problem with that, because hihachi shelo kedin afil recha get aimbo. If you're saying that really on a d'oraita level it's the same as a Yisrael, then when they do it shelo kedin, we should treat it the same way as the shelo kedin of Yisrael, and we should say she's pasul kahuna. So therefore, they reject Rav Sharsha and they say alahad Rav Sharsha beduta. It's a mistake. B'tama my kedin, b'kedin di Yisrael michla my kedin. So why is the Yisrael Kedin, the Oveh Kochavin Kedin is Pasul, because really it's Pasul Midoraita. It doesn't work at all. To be Kedin di Yisrael Michlaf, so Kedin be Kedin Yisrael Michlaf, Shalok Kedin be Kedin Yisrael Lo Michlaf. As what did we say? We said the Kedin of a Yisrael, of a non-Jew, we're going to make it like the Kedin of a Yisrael so that people, that we're going to make her Pasul Kuna so people don't think that a Kedin of Yisrael doesn't work. Get Musa. But that we're going to be concerned with. But once it's Shalok Kedin, we're not going to make it like the Shalok Kedin of Yisrael, because we're not worried that once it's Shalok Kedin, we're just going to say it's nothing. Even though the Shalok Kedin of Yisrael is posel l'kuna, but the Shalok Kedin of a non-Jew, we're not going to even bother worrying that people are going to confuse it with something that was done Shalok Kedin of Yisrael. So again, it's a matter of which one we make a gzera on that we're concerned people are going to really connect or not connect. Okay, last story for today. Abai eshkachel Rav Yosef tiyati v'kamaase agite. Abai saw Rav Yosef that he was working on get meuses, right? He was forcing people to give gets. Amar le v'ha anan hedyotot anan. Aren't we considered hedyotot? Now, why is that? What do you mean? These were like big dayanim. Why would they be considered hedyotot? First, we'll see why it's relevant that they were hedyotot. Okay, right? Hedyotot means non-mumchim, not experts. The issue is, we learned that a long time ago, that in Israel they got smicha, and in Babel they didn't get smicha. And therefore in Babel there were certain things they weren't allowed to do. So he claims, aren't we considered hedyotot for this, because we're in Babel and we don't have the smicha from Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we shouldn't be allowed to do this gitin. Okay, this is again all about leadership, right? The daf bichlal is all about leaders taking responsibility. So now he says, v'tanya, and there's a braita that says, hayara bitarfon omer, kol makom sh'ata motzei igoreiot shel ovdei kochavim. Okay, it's unclear exactly what this is, but could be, Rashi says it's asifot of Ovdei Kochavim, okay, it could be courts of Ovdei Kochavim. Af al pi shedinihem kedinei Yisrael, even though they do the law just like we do, iyata rashai lizakek lahem, you can't go to a non-Jewish court. Okay, here's a source, you're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish court, okay? The Mefarshim obviously have to figure out how could this be, you know, there are cases where you do go to non-Jewish courts, so you have to come up with exceptions. Again, we're at the end of the daf, so end of our time. We don't really have so much time to go into it, but anyway, it's an interesting sugya to look into. But here's the source, Shenemar, Ve'ela mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. Okay, this is the section in Parshat Mishpatim. It comes right after they had this kenim going up to her, you know, on the mountain, and the assumption is that lasim lifnehem is this kenim. Okay, and therefore this kenim and not non-Jews, obviously. And now they're going to say, Lifnehem velo lifnei ovdei kochavim. That's the first drasha. Tavar acher lifnehem velo lifnei hedyotot. Okay, not only it has to be this kenim, really like the ones who have smicha, not the hedyotot. So we can't judge them. How could we do this? How could we give a get meusa? Amar lei, anan shlichutayu ka'avdinan. We're doing the shlichut of the courts. In other words, the rabbis who do have smicha. What's it saying, basically? What are you going to do? You're not going to do this? And we have to make judgments. Otherwise, what's going to happen? Yeah, there's the letter of the law, but then there's reality. And we have to change reality, because it can't be that we can't give get meusa, right? That would be basically saying all these meseravot get are stuck. So what does he say? And here he gives a comparison. Midi tehavia hoda'ot v'halva'ot. So the same way we can judge hoda'ot and halva'ot, if people have loans out, if people say, yes, I agree, I owe you some money, but not all the money, or all sorts of cases like that. Now, why are they allowed to judge those? Again, what was the concern? That people will stop lending money. If the courts in Babel can't deal with those things, well, no one's going to lend money. They're going to say, I'll have no way to go to court to get my money back. So they say, Ihachi, k'zeilo v'chavalo nami, then we should also allow you to do k'zeilo v'chavalo, and presumably they didn't judge k'zeilo and chavalo, okay, robberies, thefts, injuries. So what do they say? Ki avdinan shlichutayu b'molta d'shchicha. B'molta d'lo shchicha lo avdinan shlichutayu. We only get to do it in cases that are common. The common cases that we need to deal with, but it's interesting. They say theft cases and criminal cases are less common than regular, what's the word for it, I guess? Regular dine mamono, regular disputes, right? Though disputes go on all the time between people owing money to people, but robberies, they're less common. And whether they're less common because we catch the robbers less often, which I definitely I know to be the case here, or just, they do happen. There's less criminals running around. There's more people who are just trying to get out of paying things back and kind of things like that, or not giving gets to their wives, apparently. And interestingly enough, apparently it was shachiyah. You might think it wasn't so shachiyah, or they just say maybe this is a different case, that you don't need it to be shachiyah, but it's just so important that they wanted to make an exception in this case and allow them to judge these cases.